It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's been 20 years. Iconic guests.
My guest is Danica Patrick.
I mean, you've been doing this for 17 years. You might be the OG of podcasts.
We all know this gentleman. Let's give David Stern a big round of applause. In 2004, we launched Sports Business Radio, and David was kind enough to be my first guest. He was just joking in the green room that he launched my career. So.
He hasn't let me go since. It's really impossible.
My guest is Emmett Smith. I think being authentic, being who you are, and being unapologetic about it, and being open to receive knowledge in areas that you may be unaware of, that's okay too.
My guest is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
International growth is something that I'm always thinking a lot about, and both for the NBA and for the game. And it's a recognition that nothing is preordained.
My guest is Bob Costas.
You know, Brian, as you said, I've been so lucky and did so many things that I could never even have dreamed of doing. All I really want to do now is return to the things that are most truthful to me as a person and a professional.
The biggest names in sports.
My guest is Maria Sharapova.
I wanted to be in those rooms and I wanted to be in those meetings because there was something inside of me that said that although tennis was a big part of my life, it wasn't going to be my life in capital letters, and I had to become savvy and smart. A big part of sport is business.
Our guest this week, Sue Bird.
Who told you I'm a bowler? That's hilarious.
I read that you're like a good bowler and you break 200 when you bowl. Is that not true? Is that false media report?
No, that's all fact.
Welcome to year 20 of Sports Business Radio. Now, here's your host, Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio. Another great guest for you, someone who joins us every year at this time. It's Joanne Scott, Vice President of Men's Basketball for the NCAA. We're fortunate enough to have her take us behind the scenes, inside the planning and operations into NCAA men's basketball March Madness. She does not plan the women's tournament. She's just involved with the men's tournament, so we'll just be discussing that today. But she does talk about the impact of how the growth of the women's tournament lifts all boats and has been a positive for the men's tournament. So I think you're going to enjoy that conversation today. I'm joined by executive producer Brian Griggs. Griggs, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great time of year. March Madness is officially here, and Joanne is like the OG of planning this crazy tournament. I don't know how she does it. Fascinating interview every single year because there's so much going on. And, you know, I was watching the selection show Sunday, and you realize how scattered around the country the whole tournament is. I mean, it's impressive how they set this up. So Joanne's always great to hear from.
Yeah, I mean, the two conversations that we have every year on this show that we're so lucky to have, Peter O'Reilly from the NFL to talk about planning the Super Bowl, and then this one with Joanne Scott. I mean, these are two of the biggest undertakings in U.S. sports to plan. And the difference between this and the Super Bowl is a week. You know, you've got media day, you've got NFL honors, you've, of course, got the game itself on Super Bowl Sunday. This, Griggs, to me, is, like you said, a massive undertaking because you have so many like first round and second round sites. Then you've got, you know, the regionals. Then you've got the Final Four. You're working with numerous venues at one time. Games are going on at one time. Broadcasts are going on at one time. You'll hear Joanne talk about, like, you know, being in basically March Madness Central. And, you know, she's probably got multiple phones in front of her. She's on planes going from site to site. They're working with the Final Four site, you know, months, if not a couple of years in advance. They've got the Final Four sites planned out years ahead so that they can bring in, like, next year is San Antonio for the men's tournament. So they can bring in the San Antonio people this year to see how the ops and logistics run in Arizona. So they can say, okay, you know, let's take best practices forward for next year when we host in San Antonio. By the way, the women's tournament is the Final Four is in Cleveland. And, you know, look, there are some people out there that are more into the women's tournament this year than the men's tournament. That's the first time I can remember that ever happening. But you've got Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins and Paige Beckers and, you know, just some amazing women's players out there. Teams like South Carolina, that's 32-0. Can they go undefeated over the course of an entire season? So some really compelling storylines with the women's. But again, you know, our guest today, Joanne Scott, she just handles the men's tournament. And, you know, I think I've mentioned this before. I've known Joanne for many, many years. I used to do some consulting for Nike. Joanne was at Nike. I knew Joanne even before that when she was at USA Basketball. So this is a woman who has rich history with dealing with men's basketball, both USA men's basketball, then at Nike, now at the NCAA. So, you know, you're not going to find someone more accomplished in the basketball space and someone planning events than Joanne Scott, Greg.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it too, like the Command Central, when she's talking about that, it's impressive, like how many broadcasts are going on at the same time too. And these crews here and here and here. And she was talking about how she gets to oversee it all and she can talk to, you know, people on the field or at the arena on a certain broadcast. And it's just, it's an impressive machine that is just, when you watch it, you don't realize how much is behind the scenes. You hear about that with Joanne today because it's seamless. I mean, March Madness is one of the most efficiently ran events ever. I think it always looks great. It sounds great. It's just amazing. So this is a fun interview. She's so brilliant and does such a great job.
All right. A few notes before we get to this interview. First of all, if you missed my conversation with Baseball Hall of Famer Greg Maddux last week on Sports Business Radio, please go back and listen to that. Share it with your friends who are baseball fans. Just an all-timer on this show. To me, you know, we do these conversations and, you know, I think the guest enjoys them. But to me, like the endorsement that the guest enjoyed the conversation is that they share it on their own social media platforms. And Greg Maddux shared our conversation on his own social media platforms. That meant a lot to me. You know, again, I have just lots of respect for Greg Maddux on and off the baseball field. And it was just a great conversation. Heard from so many people this week. So if you missed it, go back and listen to last week's conversation with Baseball Hall of Famer Greg Maddux. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to note before we get into some nuggets here with the NCAA tournament is, Griggs, there's a new threesome calling like a Team A for CBS. So Jim Nance retired. Ian Eagle is now in with Grant Hill and Bill Raftery. They've already called some games in the Big Ten tournament. And, you know, I just like the three of them together. I really like Ian Eagle. Have always loved his calls on everything from NBA to NFL. And I'm excited. I mean, nothing against Jim Nance, but like, I just think it's fun when you change things up a little bit, freshen them up a little bit. So that's one thing here with this tournament that I'm really paying attention to is that, you know, a broadcast team that, you know, that's going to be different this year. And Jim Nance had done this for so many years. So I think fans will immediately notice that. The other thing is, you know, I mentioned this last week. I stream Max, so HBO. By the way, if you're not watching Curb Your Enthusiasm this year, God, it's so good. It's so good. And they are going to have the games. So, like, I love my Max app. It's seamless for me. I have it on my phone. I have it on my tablet. I have it on my TVs. And to be able to go to that app and watch all of the games. And then I got to tell you, you know, I'm not going to plug, I guess I will. I have a new LG TV, 76 incher in the burger bar. And to be able to watch YouTube TV, I stream YouTube TV and they do a four screen. So, you know, it used to be you had to have four TV set up or three TV set up to watch multiple games at a time. I tweeted this out last weekend. I was watching conference tournaments, and to be able to have YouTube TV basically multi-screen my one screen, they do the work for me, and I can watch four games at one time. I mean, this is going to be the best way I've ever watched a tournament because I've got the app. I've got the multi-screen that I can watch on my new TV, 76-inch, and Griggs, I mean, this is why you have a big screen, Super Bowl and March Madness.
I totally agree. And I am just like you, love Max, use it all the time. And I am a YouTube TV guy too. And the multi-view thing is awesome. I can't wait. I've been watching, I have NBA League Pass this year. I sprung and paid for it. We love the NBA in our house. So I love watching four games at once. You can flip around. If there's one on commercial, you flip to the next one. You get the local feeds. It's awesome. So yeah, I credit to YouTube TV. That's going to be fun watching four games on one screen. I'm down.
All right. One more thing that just popped into my head before we get to some notes here around the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Thank you to Sports Business Journal. They did a nice feature on Sports Business Radio this past week. You know, they're a great industry pub that's been around for many, many years. Like we have, this is our 20th anniversary. They interviewed me about that. Griggs, you got a little run in the piece.
Yes.
Well deserved. I tell everyone all the time, and I'll say it again, this would not be the show that it is if it wasn't for Brian Griggs. So I'm glad that you got a little mention in the Sports Business Journal piece. Puck News has also written a piece on us. So, you know, it's nice for us. We're not big, you know, take a bow people, but 20 years, I'm going to take a bow for 20 years. You should too, because it's been a heck of a run.
Yeah, I mean, to be recognized, and like you said, Sports Business Journal has been around forever. It's credible, and we've known a lot of people throughout that company. So it's always nice to get a little love and, you know, talk about 20 years. I mean, that's an accomplishment for anything, you know. I mean, anything you do 20 years, a marriage or a job or anything, it's a big deal. So, yeah, congrats to you. Thanks for the shout out. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and then one last thing. April 8th, you won't be able to hear it until April 9th, but we're going to get the brain trust all time of Sports Business Radio together at the Burger Bar in my house. And we're going to record a conversation about 20 years. So that's me. That's Griggs. That's Keith Foreman, the co-founder of Sports Business Radio. Bobby Courser, the original producer of Sports Business Radio when we were on radio. Nathan Roach, who used to be a contributor to Sports Business Radio. So I'm really excited about this conversation. We're going to cook up some steaks. We're going to sit and reminisce about 20 years of the show, some favorite memories, things that stand out, how the industry has changed. But that's going to be a lot of fun to get us together. And then on April 9th, which is a Tuesday, the day after the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship, that podcast will come out on platforms everywhere, including Apple and Spotify. So Griggs, be prepared to eat well that night. I might even have some atomic fireballs ready for you, some cocktails, and we're going to, you know, record 20 years of Sports Business Radio. That'll be fun.
That's going to be great. I mean, think about that brain trust in one place. We better have some good security because, you know, close the roads off. We're going to be having our limos dropping us off. That's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think all of us have ever been together in one room.
No.
So our buddy Brad Kinzer might come and snap some photos. But yeah, that's going to be great because, again, I don't think we've all been together in one room. And so many people have contributed to the success of this show for 20 years. So anyways, April 9th, that podcast will come out. And, you know, that is around the exact time of our 20-year anniversary when we launched our first show in 2004 with late NBA Commissioner David Stern as our first guest. So that'll be fun. All right, let's talk about the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship before we get to the conversation with Joanne Scott. So the NCAA brings in around $900 million a year in media rights fees from CBS and Warner Brothers Discovery. And according to multiple reports, if you get into the tournament, it's worth about $2 million per school. And conferences get this money, and then they hand it out over the course of time. So let's do some math here. This year, the Big 12 has 8 bids into the NCAA tournament. So 8 times 2, that's $16 million to the Big 12. The SEC also has 8 bids into the men's basketball tournament. So that's $16 million to the SEC. The Big Ten, 6 bids, $12 million. The Mountain West, 6 bids, $12 million. ACC, five bids, 10 million. I mean, did you think you'd see the day where the Mountain West has more bids than the ACC? That's pretty impressive. The Pac-12, this is interesting. There's only two teams left that can collect money, and it's Oregon State and Washington State. There's four bids for the tournament, $8 million. So again, the money doesn't go to the schools. It goes to the conference. And the remaining schools in the Pac-12 are Oregon State and Washington State. So they're going to get $8 million towards the Pac-2 now, basically. So that will help them and sustain them for a little bit. I mean, I know there's inflation, so it's probably a few flights back and forth. But every bit helps. The Big East, three bids, $6 million. The American Conference, two bids, $4 million. The Atlantic, 10, two bids, $4 million. And the WCC, two bids, $4 million. So that's the breakdown of the money going to the conferences, and then it's allocated to the universities in that conference. And again, the Pac-12 is now the Pac-2, so there's only two schools in the Pac-2 that will split that money, Oregon State and Washington State. Griggs, again, this is the number one revenue generator for NCAA schools. Because remember, college football playoff, and I'm not even going to try and get into that right now because it's a whole nother model. But this is the tournament that really funds the NCAA. It's their number one source of revenue for the year. And again, it's from CBS and Turner. It's from, you know, attendance. But when they didn't have this during the pandemic, it really took a chunk out of their revenues. So, you know, great to see it growing. Great to see, you know, there's some new sponsors on board, which we'll talk about. You know, this is how the NCAA, not just basketball, but all the other sports are primarily funded.
Well, it's kind of cool too, because with this tournament, you have so many conferences represented, which you don't have in like a, you know, Super Bowl or whatever it is. It's, you've got these small little conferences, you know, they get to, they get some of this money, which is cool too. So I think that's kind of a little nugget that nothing else gives. This tournament gives these little conferences some birth and some money, which is nice. And yeah, I think it's crazy. Major sponsors, like you mentioned, I mean, they have some of the biggest ones. You know, you've got, you know, Coca-Cola, obviously one of the biggest brands in life. So you've got AT&T and some other ones. So Capital One, big time sponsors that throw some money in this too.
Yeah, no, it's big. The commercials, you know, you see Spike Lee, Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, they trot out new commercials every year. So there's a lot of thought that goes into the marketing and campaigns around this. You can see, you know, who their target demos are. But yeah, this is a huge revenue source for the NCAA. So, you know, the more people that watch, the better. But, you know, one of the points you just made, it's nice that Cinderella gets invited to the dance. And, you know, even if it's just for a day in the first round, a 16 seed can dream of knocking off a one, right? You don't have that in college football. I know we're moving to a 12-team playoff, but there's never really going to be a legitimate Cinderella. You know, like we saw Florida Atlantic University move through the tournament, or even the San Diego State, right? You're never going to see that in college football. It's always going to be the big dominant teams that get through. You're never going to see a Cinderella in that. So this is why this tournament is special. Because, you know, if you've seen the movie Hoosiers and you see, you know, Little Hickory and they get to the championship of the Indiana State championship and they win it, you know, that's kind of what this tournament is in a nutshell, is you've got hope and your little Ivy League school or your little WCC school or, you know, a smaller school has a chance to get in and potentially win. Rarely happens, but at least, you know, there's the chance that Cinderella could get to the ball. So I think that's one of the things that makes this a special tournament. Same thing with the women's side, even though I would say on the women's side, you've got four or five schools that are even more dominant than on the men's side. I mean, if someone said to me, take South Carolina or take the field, I'm taking South Carolina.
Yeah.
They're 32-0. They're pretty good. Dawn Staley is one of the best coaches of all time. You know, nothing against Caitlin Clark. I won't be shocked if she wins, or Paige Becker is at UConn. You know, they've got great programs, great coaches, but, you know, it's a dominant four or five schools on the women's side. And if someone other than that, you know, LSU won last year. If someone other than that steps up and wins, you're like, whoa, okay, that's shocking. I would say even more shocking on the men's side, which I got to tell you, Griggs, you know, UConn is great and they won last year, but it feels like other than them, it's a pretty wide open tournament. Purdue's good. Houston's good. But this year's tournament, I mean, if you saw a small school advance all the way to the finals, I wouldn't be shocked. It seems like a lot of parity this year.
Well, and I think we talked about before we jumped on air that all it takes is one of those good schools to have an off night, or if they're off right on their three ball, you know, the three ball is so important in a game now. If you go out there and only have two or three threes when you're counting on 15 made, that can change the whole game. So I think that's where you give some of these little schools a chance, because all you have to do, if you come in hot and they come in cold, it can be a game. And if you're close in that last couple minutes, anything can happen. You know, I think I just go back to the name of March Madness. It's still just like the best name because it is madness. I mean, you just never know. Every game is fun. You get some great matchups. You get schools you've never seen before. You mentioned Hoosiers. I love some of these small schools that come in there, you know, purple and weird uniforms. You've never seen these colors and they're like short shorts. And it's just kind of fun to see how it all plays out. So it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, you can just see their coach coming in, like the scene with Gene Hackman and Hoosiers, where he gets the tape measure out. Look, 10 feet, just like our home court. And, you know, it's a bigger arena, but it's still same dimensions of the basketball court, and the hoop is still 10 feet tall. So, but what a memory for these kids. And, you know, it's not just for the players. It's for the families. It's for the cheerleaders. It's for the broadcasters. Like, you know, this is a real fun time of year for those universities. All right. CBS Sports and TNT Sports delivered the most watched NCAA men's basketball selection show since 2019. They averaged 5.9 million viewers on CBS. That's up 16% from last year. That's a great sign heading into this tournament. And, you know, again, you'll hear Joanne Scott talk about Selection Sunday. We recorded this before Selection Sunday. She gives us a little bit of a preview into what goes on in that room and how that works and all the different models they have. And, you know, Griggs, it was crazy. I think it was 21 number one seeds lost in these conference championships. So, you know, you think, oh, a team's been dominant all year long in the conference, they're going to be the one to get the automatic bid. Well, what happens when they lose and someone steps up and kind of comes out of nowhere and wins the tournament, like North Carolina State in the ACC, going through Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina to win the ACC? It screws up all the models, because no one had North Carolina State going to the tournament, going into the ACC tournament. But because of the automatic bid, now a team that, you know, may have been part of the last four in, now they get pushed down, because it's like, okay, wait, we have to go with the automatic bid. We didn't have NC State making the NCAA tournament, but because they have the automatic bid, they're in, someone else loses out. So there were a lot of models that had to be reshuffled this past Sunday because of what happened in conference tournaments. Your Oregon Ducks, I mean, people did not have the Oregon Ducks winning the Pac-12. They would have been a bubble team. They probably wouldn't have gotten in if they hadn't won the tournament. So when they win the Pac-12 tournament, by the way, the last one ever after many, many, many years. Now that have to, you know, the selection committee has to go, okay, wait a minute. Now North Carolina State and Oregon are in. We didn't have them getting in, but because of the automatic bids, they're in. So there was a lot of shuffling in that room on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's why I love that Selection Sunday show, because it is kind of like organized chaos. Like there's an element of like what's going to happen, and that makes it fun and makes it watchable. Where is this team going to be? I love when they cut to the rooms where the players are all sitting there on their phones waiting to the announcement, and then they go crazy, or they're like, oh, we got to play them. You can tell that the room kind of changes when it gets announced. Right. That's so fun. I love how they film that whole show.
You wonder at some point if these selection committees, whether it's a college football playoff rankings or this, if they just walk into the room and they say, AI, rank all of the teams and give us a bracket. And like, see what AI comes up with, right? And compare AI's model, which is purely analytics and numbers and data, versus your own. Because AI is growing. And I'm not saying the selection committee would ever do that. But it would be interesting to see like how close is your model to AI's model, because they crunched all those numbers like in real time, ChatGPT, and it's crazy how the computers and how, you know, things can just be figured out on the fly, Griggs.
Well, you hear about it even on broadcast now. You're talking about analytics more, and that's all the AI powered stuff where it's gathering this information and building these huge databases to do that kind of prediction. So it would be pretty interesting to see if you threw it at an AI machine and say, okay, pick 68, go, and see what would come out. So yeah, that's an interesting concept.
All right, who did you pick for the NCAA men's basketball championship to win?
I have two brackets, but the one for the Sports Business Radio bracket, I have UConn winning against Houston, I believe, in the final game.
Okay. I think I have the same thing,
actually.
UConn, unless they beat themselves, I think they're the best team in the tournament. Dan Hurley's a really good coach. They won it last year. They know how to win it. You know, would I be shocked if Houston or Purdue or, you know, someone else steps up and wins it? No. Honestly, I don't know enough this year about men's college basketball. I haven't been a junkie and watching it nonstop. But guess what? If you, the listener, want to compete against us in a March Madness bracket, we've set one up on ESPN. And if you go to our Twitter feed at SB Radio, we've provided a link. The password is SportsBiz. If you want to get in there and compete against us, go to our Twitter link or X, find our link to the bracket, and you can compete against us. And, you know, we'll come up with some kind of fun prize to give to the winner and certainly a shout out. But it's mostly, you know, we're competitive and we like to come out on top on things. And, you know, Griggs, I want to beat you and you want to beat me. I think you beat me last year pretty soundly, if I recall.
I think so.
Yeah. And then on the women's side, you know, I love Caitlin Clark. Paige Beckers, but I'm going South Carolina. Like I said, they're 32-0. Dawn Staley is probably the best coach in women's college basketball, and I'm just not going to bet against them. So on the women's side, I'm going South Carolina. So, I mean, you know, and South Carolina lost last year. You know, they didn't get there. LSU won. So I think, you know, they're hungry to get back on top, and I'm going South Carolina. So, you know, I'm certainly not going out on a ledge. I'm basically going chalk. Number one overall seed, UConn. Number one overall seed, South Carolina. No revelations there, but I think they're the two best teams, and I think they're going to get through.
Yeah, South Carolina, I mean, they're just so disciplined. When you watch them play, they just know where to be on the court. They know how their plays run. They're just efficient, great shooting team. So, yeah, it's hard to go. I mean, 32-0, this is their time to shine. I think they're going to take it.
But I think on the women's side, the two matchups people want to see, they want to see Caitlin Clark against LSU.
Yeah.
Angel Reese and the whole hand in front of the face thing from last year. And they want to see Caitlin Clark against South Carolina. Like, those are the matchups that people want to see. And I will go out on a ledge right now and say this. If we see either of those two matchups, they will have more people watch than any men's tournament game. I don't think there's a matchup in the men's tournament that would get more viewers than Caitlin Clark in Iowa against either South Carolina or LSU. We'll see.
Well, I talk about Selection Sunday for the women's side too. When those, you know, teams are announced, like the Caitlin Clark Iowa team, you know, the tickets are sold out as quick as they can, whatever venue they're playing at, because it's huge. I mean, those are must see games. They're women athletes that are just phenomenal to watch, and it's always fun.
All right. One more note before we get to the interview with Joanne Scott, Vice President of Men's Basketball for the NCAA. Griggs, this is good news. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about Sports Illustrated being dead and, you know, this iconic magazine that's been around and been basically the Smithsonian of sports for decades. Great pictures, great articles, amazing writers. That it was coming to an end. Well, guess what? As Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend. Sports Illustrated, which is basically licensed by Authentic Brands Group, they have a new 10-year deal with Minute Media. And you may say, who's Minute Media? Well, they're behind the Players Tribune and a few other publications. But This is great news. It sounds like Minute Media is going to try and continue the legacy of Sports Illustrated by keeping, you know, most of the staff, if not all of the staff, in place. There's a union for Sports Illustrated. So it sounds like this will be a much better home than what they had before. That was the Arena Group. So I've done some work with Minute Media and the Players Tribune via our Sports PR Summit event. They're a good group of people. Even Derek Jeter welcomed Sports Illustrated to the Minute Media Players Tribune family on social media. So look, anytime you can continue the great work that's being done. I mean, we're talking about 20 years, Griggs.
Yeah.
We're nothing. We're a brand new baby compared to Sports Illustrated and how long they've been around and the work that they've done and just where they sit in the pop culture of our country with sports over the last, you know, 70, 80 years. So very happy that this deal got done. Happy for the people that work at Sports Illustrated that will hopefully continue to be able to put out the great work that they do.
Yeah, let's get that first magazine in the mailboxes, right? give them some new life. I'm excited. Yeah, that's great news. And maybe this will be just a nice little refresher and fresh breath of air and really get the team going and get some good content out there. Because, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's iconic in our culture in America. I mean, it's Sports Illustrated. If you're a sports fan, you know what Sports Illustrated is, and you've had them in your hand and read them and seen the pictures and iconic stuff. So I'm excited.
Well, and the key for them is going to be how did they figure out the digital space, right? Like they kind of did that before, but, you know, there were a lot of people who were like, well, I'm used to getting the magazine in the mail every Thursday. They're going to have to figure out the digital space. And Minute Media has done a good job of that, again, with entities like the Players Tribune. So, yeah, I'm happy for all the people at Sports Illustrated. All right, one more time, go to our X feed, Twitter, at SB Radio. Look for our link to our March Madness bracket. The password is SportsBiz. If you want to compete with us, do it before, I think, Thursday morning early is the deadline. It's always fun to compete with our listeners. Coming up next, Joanne Scott, Vice President of Men's Basketball for the NCAA. This is one of my favorite conversations every year. I think the world of Joanne, because a huge job, and she's kind enough to join us every year and share the behind the scenes. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. Hey, everyone. Brian Berger here. I love innovation and I love tech. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about what MatSing is doing. You may have a solid wireless network at your venue, but do you have the highest performing antennas in the world to power your network? MatSing is the leader in multi-beam lens antennas. Venues such as AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, Allegiant Stadium, which is home of the Las Vegas Raiders and Super Bowl 58, and Amalie Arena, which is home of the Tampa Bay Lightning, all have MatSing's innovative lens antennas. As a matter of fact, MatSing's antennas are deployed at over 100 venues globally, including 50% of NFL venues, 35% of NBA and NHL venues, several Formula One racetracks, and even at the upcoming 2024 Paris Olympics. Do you want to deliver a fully connected venue experience to your fans? Then MatSing is the key to delivering a best-in-class mobile experience for fans who want to post pictures, watch videos, order food, or place real-time wagers. For more information on how MatSing can help your venue, visit MatSing.com. That's MatSing.com. Or email Tracy Salazar at TracySalazar at MatSing.com. That's Tracy Salazar at MatSing.com. MatSing is the exclusive antenna partner of Sports Business Radio.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
My guest is Joanne Scott, Vice President of Men's Basketball for the NCAA. She joins me every year around this time of year on Sports Business Radio. Joanne, how are you? Thanks for joining me again.
I'm great. It's a beautiful day in Indianapolis. The weather of March has been great, and we're busily preparing for March Madness.
Yeah, I mean, let's discuss the tournament. I always love getting, you know, what's new with this year's tournament from you. The Final Four is going to be in Arizona. So how has that worked out? You know, give our listeners, I know you plan well in advance, and you've been talking to the team in Arizona for a long time.
Yeah, we did a Zoom call with all of our corporate partners back in the fall, and the forecast at that time in Phoenix was 82 and sunny. So that's what I led with, is that, when you go to Phoenix, you're 82 and sunny. We were there in 2017. The weather was fantastic. The crowds were great. And it's, although it was pretty warm and pretty hot from planning in July and August, it's lovely there now. The capacity, we're out at the State Farm Stadium in Glendale. We bring in our own seating system, which I think I've told you before. So we're looking at about 75,000 people that will be, coming to Phoenix and then, going to the game in Glendale. We've been going since, we did a tip off in September of 2022. And then we traveled once a month since June. Our whole entire staff, our good friends at Turner and that do our fan events, our broadcasters, we travel all the same 3 days so that the locals can, plan and not be touring every day. So we're ready to go and looking forward to it.
Yeah. Explain that to our listeners. I don't know that we've ever gotten into that. I know Jay Perry well. There's a host committee in the cities where the Final Four is. So it's not like you guys just show up and, have to do everything. There's a lot of groundwork that's been laid before you get there for the Final Four, right?
Absolutely. And we couldn't do it without our host, which is Arizona State. We also have a host of every NCAA championship. So Arizona State University is our host. And the local organizing committee is led by Jay Perry. So what we do is we buddy up. We find a buddy in the local organizing committee and they buddy with one of our staffs and then they help us with our planning. So we have a buddy that helps us with all of our permitting and all of the things we need to do at the stadium. We have a transportation person that helps us work with transportation. Public safety, obviously, is a big piece for the folks in Phoenix. And then marketing and all the marketing we need to do to get folks to come out to our fan events. So that's all done by the local organizing committee right there in Phoenix. And they've been on board for just over a year now.
All right, let's back up. Selection Sunday. Take us into the room. Is there anything different this year? How many people are on the selection committee? How does that all unfold?
So we were at 10 for many years, and then we went to 12 members 2 years ago, I believe. I think it's 2 years ago. And so there'll be 12 men's basketball committee members in the room. There's about four staff members. And the games go late Saturday night, as you know. And there's some automatic qualifiers that come in Saturday night. And then there's five championships on Sunday. So we come into the room early on Sunday morning. We do this exercise called scrubbing, which is in our principles and procedures where we scrub the teams and compare the teams 1 to 68. And then we have to bracket. And we usually don't start bracketing till noon with the selection show on at 6. But we have to bracket contingency brackets because of those five championships. And so it could be if this team wins, they're this seed. And if they, or it could be a team that's an AQ that weren't in the tournament. So we have several different seed lists, and we have several different brackets that we bracket. And then we go through and it's programmed with software, but we all try and put our eyes on it and review everything and just look for anything that could be challenging. And then we just wait until the Big Ten tournament is over and then send the CBS the bracket and go from there. And then once it hits the show, it's just kind of, it goes on its own.
What about regions? You talked about seeding. I know in the past we've talked about trying to eliminate some of the travel costs and keep people from traveling, East Coast to West Coast or vice versa. How much does that get thought about when you're laying out the matchups?
Yeah. So the bracketing is software, and this committee, as long as I've been here, the committee has voted to bracket via mileage. So unless there is I don't want to use the word violation, but unless there's something that won't allow that. So that is why a lot of folks don't understand why a team flies from east to west or west to east. When we polled the membership and the coaches and our membership, they want to stay on the same line and not drop a line to go closer. And so we first off, we bracket by the regions first. And then we bracket by first and second rounds. And we do the regions 1 through 16. And then we go back and then we bracket by the closest first and second round site. So again, that is by mileage. And it does depend on the line that you're on as to where you could be placed, because it goes in seed order. So it is done, you know, what we would call regionally. It just depends on where you fall on that seed line as to what direction or where you might be going. Very complicated.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Okay, let's talk about CBS and Turner, because, you know, this has just gotten more sophisticated over the years. Like I stream on Max. Now I can watch the tournament on Max. I love it. I can watch it on TV, on my iPad, on my mobile device. It just seems like the tournament is available in more and more places every year via that CBS Turner partnership. And then I know, you know, you have all kinds of meetings and conversations with the broadcast talent. Maybe you can just walk us through all of that.
Yeah. So I think it's 14th year for this partnership. What happens in February is the end of February, we meet on production and we talk about production and everything before us and anything that we want to do at the tournament with our broadcast partners. And then last week we met, we did a virtual conference with the CBS and Turner talent. And so we use our officiating guru, Chris Rastetter, and he helps answer any questions they may have officiating, talk about rules changes, talk about where we are. So it's getting them up to speed as well. So they're great partners. They work together really well. I get the general feeling they're all very excited to work on this property, and they look forward very much to March. But I think it's an interesting, and it's been a very successful partnership. And we always say it's kind of like, you know, it's CBS Turner and the NCAA. And so it's just a really good partnership between all three of us.
So Jim Nantz has moved on. Ian Eagle is going to replace Jim. Jay Wright is part of the coverage. Now, I like how this is kind of freshened up a little bit. Not that I didn't like Jim Nantz, but I'm a big fan of Ian Eagle and Jay Wright, obviously, you know, recently a coach and has a real good sense of the talent that's out there and how the game is played today.
Yeah, Ian will do a fantastic job. He's done a lot of games with Bill Raftery, in case you didn't know that, but they've worked together for years and years. And so we're looking forward to Ian. And then I think it's, you know, Jay Wright was in the studio last year. I think he just really brings that authentication of being there and what's going through minds. And he's really good at, you know, explaining what's going on, because he's been there and he's been to the Final Four. And so he'll be in the studios as well. So I think bringing that coach's mindset really does bring a lot to that talent and the Turner set.
So who's on the A team with Ian calling the Final Four?
Grant Hill and Bill Raftery.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good threesome, right?
It really is.
And Grant has been good since he's been put in that spot.
Yep. Former player, played at the highest level. And Bill, you know, just have been doing this and played. And so it's a good, they're really good together. I think they're very natural together.
Yeah. Well, and Grant's the head of USA Basketball now, right?
Yes, he is. Yep. He's the, I think, the general manager.
So he has a really good, good sense of basketball in the U.S. As a whole.
Yes.
Okay. Any other broadcast elements that we should be paying attention to? Streaming, you know, is the March Madness app, is that still in existence?
Oh, yes. March Madness Live. I believe last year our engagement, it was the most engaged Final Four ever, and it was up like 20%. So, again, I think it's something like 19 platforms where you'll be able to watch March Madness in order to partake of the tournament. But yeah, March Madness Live, it's really does a good job of, you know, I think focusing on that next generation of fans. It's really done some great, I would say, viewing. If you, as a viewer, you can kind of watch four games all at once, you know, and the one blows when it gets to be a close game. And so I think it's just a fantastic app and they're constantly improving it. But it will be in full force this year.
I want to ask you about the overall interest in college basketball. Caitlin Clark has really elevated the women's game and the interest in the women's game. I would imagine that elevates
all of college basketball, men's and women's, right?
Yeah, I think basketball and college basketball in general has a unique fan that watches men's and women's college basketball. And I think that's what March Madness does. I think both tournaments bring out, you know, the diehards, but they bring out a lot of the college fans. I always use this terminology since I started this job 11 years ago. It's like an alumni weekend gathering. You know, everybody is very loyal to their alma mater. They might not have watched it if they weren't in it the last few, but it brings everybody together. They wear their alma mater's, you know, shirt. And so I think that the fact they're going on at the same time, they really do complement one another. And I do believe that, you know, college basketball, you know, fans will watch either.
How has name, image, and likeness, NIL, how has that changed the landscape of the tournament? Because certainly it's changed so much about college athletics in general. How has it changed the tournament?
You know, for us, it hasn't done much. Obviously, there are a lot of players. First, the NCAA cannot be involved at all. So, you know, we cannot be involved with NIL. But where it has changed is, you know, there are players that are signing NIL deals, and that might be with our corporate partners at the NCAA. It may not be with our corporate partners. And so it's more so on the player side of what they do during the tournament with a corporate partner, or do what they do before the tournament, or like I said, their own NIL deal. So I think most of that, you know, stays out of the tournament, and the student athletes are focused. And I think that's the great thing about this tournament is it's win or go home. And so I think the focus really is on the play, but most of that NIL is dealt with our universities and our individuals directly, and the student athlete.
I mean, it's just interesting to me. I think I shared with you last year, I went inside of Duke basketball last year, and they told me that 14 of the 15 players on the roster have agents. Now it's like, wow, college basketball has really changed when 14 of the 15 players on the Duke basketball team have agents. So
yeah, it's been a seismic shift in the last 2 years. I think that there's folks around, you know, that say there's been more change in the last 2 to 3 years than there have been in 20 to 30 years.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back after this.
5G is here. Is your stadium ready? From an immersive fan experience to efficient game day operations, 5G is transforming sports and entertainment. If you're ready to jumpstart your 5G transformation, look no further than Boingo Wireless. Boingo is one of the largest operators of indoor wireless networks in the U.S. They provide stadiums and arenas with state-of-the-art 5G networks and support teams across the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, and NCAA. I'm constantly interacting with sports executives, and the reason they love working with Boingo is because Boingo manages 5G and Wi-Fi networks end-to-end, offloading very stretched IT teams. Whether your stadium is looking to support mobile ticketing, cashless payment, or connected operations, Boingo has you covered. But don't just take it from me. Their customers include world-class venues like Soldier Field, State Farm Arena, Petco Park, and University of Louisville. Boingo in 5G. Now that's what I call a win-win. For a limited time, Boingo has a special offer for Sports Business Radio listeners. They're offering a free 5G assessment for your stadium or arena. To get started, simply email sbradio@boingo.com and mention this podcast. That's sbradio@boingo.com. Our thanks to Boingo for their continued support of Sports Business Radio.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
You know, I've watched Nick Saban retire. I've watched Chip Kelly go from being a head coach at UCLA to being an offensive coordinator at Ohio State. Are you seeing any impact of kind of NIL in today's modern game on college basketball? Because I haven't really seen that yet. I haven't seen anyone say, oh, this is too much for me.
I haven't seen it, but I think the coach, it's more so that it's just new. It's just the change in what some coaches who've been doing this for so long have ever had to deal with. And it doesn't involve the sport itself as much as having to adapt off the court and the time it takes off the court and what it does, you know, what it does maybe with the team dynamic. So I think it's more of that with a lot of the coaches than it is anything. But for me, I have not seen that. I hear a lot from coaches. It's just different. It's a lot. You just have to adapt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these schools now have someone who's in charge of NIL and of kind of off the court issues, you know, almost like a general manager for a college athletic department, which that job didn't exist 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, a lot of them have and just you know, adapted pretty quickly and announcing general managers for their teams. I think that's just school to school, but it's definitely, you know, it's here. And as you know, it defaults to the state law for NIL. So I think, you know, having somebody that's very well versed on that with your state law at your university is really important as well in your athletic department.
Explain the stipends for the student athletes. I know the NCAA has been great about making sure that students' families can come to the Final Four and be there with them for this big moment.
Yeah, I believe that was adopted in 2015. But there is a family travel stipend. It's $3,000 for the student athletes, the submitted roster of student athletes participating in the Final Four, that the families get $3,000. Should they advance to the finals, the championship Monday, then the family gets an additional $1,000. And so that is paid to both men's and women's family members of the Final Four teams.
Okay. And, you know, the NCAA tournament is one of the biggest generators of revenue for the NCAA. So this is like a really important undertaking for everyone, right?
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's above 90%. It's whatever the exact percentage is of the revenue to the NCAA. It does come from men's basketball. And so it comes from our broadcast partners and our corporate partners that underwrite that. So it is. It's a large majority. There's a lot on the line, as you know, and we canceled in 2020. You know, I think people already knew the value of it, but it became real in 2020. And so there's a lot of pressure on. There's a lot of contingencies, a lot of thinking about what goes here and there and just trying to keep it going. It's a well-oiled machine and just keep it going in the right direction.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some of those corporate sponsors, AT&T, Coca-Cola, Capital One. I always see the Capital One commercials with Charles Barkley and Samuel L. Jackson and Spike Lee. I always look forward to like what's new with those commercials for this year. But like by the end of the tournament, those three companies are household names. They are very prominent in all of the commercial reels for the games.
Yeah, they are. They all do unique advertising. I tell folks, I think, people tune in just to see the Capital One ads that they will be running. A lot of people stay tuned. We have a new corporate partner this year. I think that will probably get some of that same similar comparisons. But I think what they do a great job is like they're activating in many platforms, whether it's an ad, whether it's March Madness Live, whether it's our fan events, those AT&T, Cap One, and Coca-Cola. All three sponsor March Madness Music Festival in Phoenix. So a big music piece play to it. They activate inside our fan fest at men and women's basketball. They do a lot with sampling at all of our rounds, several of our rounds, preliminary rounds, and our Final Fours for men's and women's basketball. They do a lot with all of our other championships as well. But for this month, for March Madness, they have a good mix of the platforms of how they're activating social media. You know, they're really doing a good job on all levers, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how far it's come. It used to be back in the day, you know, you literally just had some signage at the venue and on the court. Now you mention all these activations and the clever creative around the commercials and the social media and certainly the product at the venue and getting the product in the hands of the coaches and the student athletes and the fans and attendance. It really is a whole different feel to it than it was years ago.
Yeah. And we do allow rotating signings for our corporate partners in prelims rounds. And that's all of our CCPs. When it comes to the finals, it's held for our corporate champions. We have video board messaging. Like you said, it's they do a good job of leveraging it. And, you know, it's a whole month, as we say. It's not quite the whole month, but it's 3 out of the 4 weeks. So it's good brand messaging for them all. And I can't thank all of them enough for what they do to help elevate this you know, tournament, both tournaments for us.
Yeah, and they become synonymous with college basketball, which I think is good for them as well. All right, the Final Four next year, I believe, is in San Antonio, right?
It is. It's in San Antonio in the Alamo Dome.
So, the way it seems to work is like the San Antonio people will be in Arizona this year taking notes, preparing for their turn next year. So, I mean, just so our listeners know, like you're thinking about this and that team is thinking about this well over a year in advance.
Yes, we were in San Antonio this last September planning already. And what we do is we kind of set the table and get the local organizing committee going. San Antonio will be in Phoenix with about a couple dozen folks from public safety to convention center and hotels to the operations of it all. And they will be there. And then Indianapolis is 26th, and there'll be a good contingency from Indianapolis there as well. Detroit will be in 27, and they're bringing 6 people. And then we go to Vegas. And so having coming off the Super Bowl, as you know, there, they will be there in full force. And so will Dallas, which is 2030. So we bring them in. We give them a peek behind the scenes. We do tours with them. We let them talk to the folks that are in charge of all the build outs, because that's really what it's about, is how does this work in your city? So, we welcome them, and we couldn't do it without them.
I think it's interesting that you announced the Final Four sites so far in advance. I imagine the advantage would be the planning, right?
Yeah, well, it's the planning, but it's more so hotel rooms and convention centers. The stadiums, are pretty good this time of year, but it's convention center space and it's hotel room blocks. So we have to be this far out, and in order to secure all that with the cities that we're in.
All right. We always find it interesting, your personal schedule during this, March Madness time period. So basically from Selection Sunday through the championship game, walk us through what you're going to be doing.
So Selection Sunday is a late night because, teams are finding out where they're going. And there's a lot of operational questions that get asked. But Monday morning, I will drive over to Dayton to the first four. The first four teams we have teams that land within, sometimes 16 hours of being announced of the selection show, depending where they're coming from. So we have our fine folks at the University of Dayton as our host there. They'll meet and greet the teams. And by the time I get there, then we have media and press and open practices for fans to attend for free. And then we have games Tuesday, Wednesday. I'll head out during the middle of the games. I have another coworker there that will cover, and then I'll fly down to Atlanta and I'll be in the studios. We have a control center there where we can watch all the games and put out the fires, as we say, or deal with the problem solving. Come back and spend a couple of days. And then I head to each regional site. The vice chair of our men's basketball committee I will travel with. We'll go Boston, Detroit, LA, then Dallas. Luckily, all cities we can get to with just one flight and no connection, and then end up in Phoenix on Monday prior to the championship Monday. So yeah, it's a crazy month. I'm just getting over a head cold. So it's a good thing that I got sick in February and not March.
Yeah, no kidding. And we said last year, like, we still need to get you a private jet deal so you can be traveling around on the PJ.
Yeah, this year's really good with those cities. They have nonstops to each city. Then again, my boss, Dan Gavitt, the senior vice president of basketball, and our chair, Charles McClelland, who is the commissioner of the SWAC, they will go the opposite. So there's we're in games the same night in opposite cities.
And, wherever you are, like you explained earlier, you've got lieutenants basically at all of these arenas, whether it's the Hoops committee or people from your staff. So if you need to be in touch with someone because there's, like you said last year, a lost bus somewhere, or something happened with the game clock, like, you are in that command center and you have access to everyone at every venue.
Yeah, we do. First off, all of our membership are the hosts. So our own schools host, and we couldn't do it without them because they're the ones doing a lot of the on the ground preps ahead of time, just like the Phoenix local organizing committee. But then we also send staff or consultants into each site. And so we're always on a communication channel and a communication text. If there's issues, they come to us so we can help solve them, and they can pay attention to the games We try and think of anything going wrong that could go wrong at another site. So yes, they're on the ground and they're also decision makers. We also have those 12 members of the men's basketball committee, and the chair and vice chair will be in Atlanta with Danny and I, and then the rest of the committee chairs will be on site as well. And they are really the ones that oversee each site.
Last question for you. You've been doing this for a long time. You know, you've worked at Nike. You've had this job for a long time. You work with USA Basketball. Like, what are some of the biggest changes and innovations that you've seen over the years?
I would say, when it comes to technology, I'd say the drone. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of folks that want the drone to fly and like just let it go. And, you know, it's a championship. It's a win, go home. And so I think things like the cameras and the drones and what they can do with technology, we're actually for the first time this year, we're allowing technology on the bench. So the coaches will have tablets that they can download, and we will download and we control the iPads, but they will have technology to be able to watch replays. We haven't done that. And you have to remember, we have 355 Division I men's and women's teams playing. So when we pass a rule, they all have to, okay, now we'll do this. So we're doing that for the first time. So I think it's cameras. I think Turner and CBS continually challenge us with how can the broadcast be differently, can be different. I mean, we've had, the games being kind of broadcast on Twitter with, announcers and a little different aspect of bringing in the VIPs and the former players and so forth. So I think that aspect of how the consumer, how it enhances the consumer's vision of the event. But even more so than that, I would just say to you that it's on so many platforms, the March Madness Live. And that all just to me ties back to technology and how you all consume it. I don't get to watch much of it. But how the consumer, what do they want to see?
Yeah, I can only imagine your debrief meetings after March Madness of going back and like, what worked? What do we need to tweak? Things like that.
Well, and some of it too, Brian, is, if you have last second shots and buzzer beaters, then social media just blows up. So, and if you have overtime games, and if you don't, then it seems, but even the social media aspect of it is just off the charts.
Yeah. Joanne Scott, Vice President of Men's Basketball for the NCAA. Best of luck to you this year. Again, you always do an amazing job, and we're all excited about March Madness. Thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio.
Thank you, and embrace the joy of March Madness.
We will. Talent, hard work, focus, and determination got you here. Now take the right steps to prepare for your future and ensure that you stay at the top of your game, your business, your craft. Morgan Stanley Sports and Entertainment is a division of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management, dedicated to serving the unique and sophisticated needs of elite and professional athletes, entertainers, executives, creators, and other top talent and professionals in the sports and entertainment industry. They deliver the education, strategies, and expertise you need to help advance your financial game plan at every stage of your career journey. They speak the language. They know your business. Morgan Stanley will work with you to achieve your goals. I've trusted Morgan Stanley with my personal wealth management for almost 20 years. Visit Morgan Stanley at morganstanley.com/GSE. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to the Sports Business Radio team, Brian Griggs, Nicole Wardle, and Josh Blank. A reminder to kindly subscribe to our award-winning podcast. Our feed features 20 years of podcasts with the biggest names in sports and business. Go to Apple or Spotify podcasts and click on the plus sign in the upper right-hand corner. That way, every episode of Sports Business Radio will be delivered to your listening device each week. We'd love to have you give us a 5-star rating and write a review of our podcast as well. It'll take you just 2 minutes. I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, X at SB Radio, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. SBR is produced by Brian Griggs at GriggsProductions.com.